from the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Today, making a change from the VAR debate, it's the Vardy debate. And with him facing Fulham, can there be any? Elsewhere, we've got all the essential info you need ahead of Game Week 10, including with Man City embarking on a truly sweet set of fixtures. Should we man up or man down? It's all in the official Fantasy Premier League podcast from the Premier League. Hello, FPL manager. Thank you so much for joining us on the official FPL podcast. Friday's 6:30 p.m. deadline is looming like an 18th century textile worker, and we've assembled some of the finest fantasy minds around. To wit, Tom Williams, whose team Netflix and Chillwell is actually leading our guest league and in the top 200k. Hello, Tom.
Hello, James. Yes, leading the FPL pod league, importantly, right, but in need of major surgery.
I see. Perhaps we can help. Sam Bonfield's on hand with the rather erroneously named best in all the world, actually second in our league, and 9 points behind Tom. But you got the biggest points haul of us all this week, Sam.
I'm coming for you, Tom. You need to be careful.
Right. I can feel your hot breath, Sam, on the back of my neck, and it's giving me sleepless nights.
Love it. Oh.
I'm going to move on to Julien Laurent, FPL visionary, who sees players weeks, months, sometimes even years before others. Or after.
Exactly.
And, you know.
Bonjour.
The FPL game hasn't quite caught up with you, Jules. That's why you're a little bit lower down.
Yeah, I'm seventh. I'm happy. So it's a good number if you're a Manchester United fan. Right. but I did my surgery. I played my wild card last weekend. And you know what they say for wild card? It's only the second week after you played it that really pays off.
Is that what they say?
Well, certainly that's why I tell myself. So let's see.
Did you get a red arrow after a wild card?
Yeah,
did you?
Indeed.
It's funny because
although I got 61 points, it's not too bad. But I was close for something big, and it just didn't come my way.
Right. What were you close with? I know you didn't cap. You were part of the kind of the school of thought that didn't captain Bruno Fernandes this week, and FPL managerdom was very much divided up into those who did and those who didn't. I didn't. You didn't. Tom and Sam, yeah, you both did. Before we get your thoughts on Bruno Fernandes, Jules, why was it that you shouldn't have captained Harry Kane like you did?
Our friend and colleague Mark Southerns, who is like Sam, pro in the fantasy world, said when he went on the show a few weeks ago that he spoke to this Norwegian genius, who's also very good at fantasy football, who said to him that you should never captain someone who plays against another top six team or a top six team, which obviously I didn't. I remembered and then still ignored completely this weekend, which cost me a few points.
That's interesting. What other kind of,
it's really interesting,
what other golden rules are there that I was just completely unaware of? Because that sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Sam, what have you got?
I don't know if there's any set kind of ones that you should definitely never do. But for me, I never make a change on the deadline day, because I always feel like that it means that I'm kind of panicking, and I generally go with the wrong decision at that stage. So I'd rather make the decisions the day before, know I'm set, and there's no panic involved then. Logic, in theory.
I'm curious though. Say, for example, this week, if you were like me, looking to bring in Jamie Vardy, who we're going to be talking about a bit, and Leicester are playing in a Europa League fixture on Thursday night and the deadline's on Friday, would you countenance a Friday move?
No, so I'll just wait until the end of the Europa League games, make sure that he makes it through, and then make my transfer just before I go to bed that night.
I see,
set
right.
them up.
Okay.
If you make it at midnight and 1 minute, on Thursday night, it's not technically Friday for Sam, so you know you can.
I think I can be on board with that. Tom, what about you?
I try and avoid doubling up on defensive assets as far as possible. I know a lot of people have been doubling up on Chelsea defenders, which I can understand, given you know the sort of points that Reece James and Kurt Zouma and Ben Chilwell have been coming up with. But I just tend to think if you do that, you really leave yourself a hostage to fortune. One unlucky rebound, one bad deflection, and your 12-point haul is slashed to almost nothing.
Yeah. I've got one for you, James. Oh, yeah. Don't put Andy Robertson on the bench. Why, my friend? What's going on there? 12 points that cost you. What did you do?
Okay, so this is, I'm sure, an experience that we've all had where you're watching a game and you're chuckling to yourself about how clever you are and how many points you're getting from a player. And then you have that nagging doubt. wait, I didn't leave him on the bench, did I? And we're creeping James. Horror. You look and you dip. You know, it's the classic it's the classic overthinking it, which I think is probably one of the ultimate golden rules of this. Don't do that. But it's so.
I mean, that is the secret. That is the secret of FPL. You're not competing against all the people in the world and in your mini leagues. You're only really competing against yourself.
Oh, that's the worst opponent of all. So yeah, with all the talk about how Liverpool were, you know, down to a couple of training cones at the back, I thought, well, I must have just thought, no, I'll have these other fine fellows in. They'll get clean sheets and I'll skip.
Oh, that is painful.
Well, yeah, but we've all done it. And, you know, more fool me. And I won't be making that mistake again. Only his biggest points haul of the season. Well, he was one of the big scorers of game week 9. Son did really well as well, which must have been a bitter pill for the hundreds of thousands of managers. I think it was 400,000 managers transferred him out ahead of that clash with Man City. Milner was another impressive player. We'll touch on him. And, of course, Bruno Fernandes, who I think is now looking like a bit of a must-have. Anyway, much more of this to come as we get onto the game week 10 fixtures. Hurrah. Game week 10. All our hard work for this next set of fixtures has to be done by, well, midnight on Thursday if you're Sam Bonfield. But for the rest of us, we've got until 6:30 UK time on Friday evening because there's a Friday game. It's Crystal Palace against Newcastle. Not sure if anyone's looking to make any moves for Palace or Newcastle players.
I've got Callum Wilson.
Ah, is he back?
And hopefully back
right.
from his hamstring woe.
Okay, and do you think he's going to do well in that game?
I don't know.
Okay.
But Newcastle do have a reasonably attractive run of fixtures, so I'm keeping the faith with Callum Wilson for now. He's very good value in that bracket of strikers, so I see no reason to get rid of him at the moment.
Who has Wilfred Zaha, and what are they planning to do about him? Just me, is it? Right, okay.
I told you on the FPL show, James, didn't I?
What did you say?
Don't go with Zaha. He will only cause you drama.
Right.
And yet again, we see Zaha causing some FPL drama.
Right, there's the golden rule then. Never get Zaha. No, but you're absolutely right. He always looks like it's such a logical move always. And yet, good. Thanks for that one. Saturday, Brighton taking on Liverpool. Man City, Burnley, Everton, Leeds and West Brom, Sheffield United. On Sunday, you got Saints against Man United. Chelsea against Spurs, Arsenal, Wolves, and then the weekend, in inverted commas, wraps up on Monday night with Leicester, Fulham and West Ham, Villa. Leicester, Fulham, that I think is another of the big questions that every fantasy manager now has foremost in their minds. Who is playing the Cottagers and how many of their players can I get in? It's Leicester this week. So what are we all doing about that? Tom?
I am keeping James Justin and hoping for a clean sheet from him. I've got Harry Kane up front, and I suspect that Jamie Vardy will probably outscore him points wise this weekend. But just the form that Spurs are in, I'm not looking to ditch any Spurs players currently. So I'll just sit tight and hope that Vardy doesn't score too many goals against Fulham.
Right, because the Kane Vardy swap is, I think, right now, if not the, it's one of the most popular transfers that people are doing, and it's certainly the one that I intend to do. Is that wrong? I know Kane's just been extraordinary, but Vardy and Fulham.
And then Sheffield United,
yeah.
And then Brighton as well.
Yeah.
That's the next three games for Leicester. And you look at those games, I mean, Fulham and Sheffield United have obviously struggled this season. Brighton play quite an attacking style of football, so you could expect spaces for Jamie Vardy and for Leicester overall. Considering he doesn't play in the Europa League as well, or he's tend to be rested, you could expect him to be quite on good form for those three games.
Earlier in the weekend, on Saturday indeed, Brighton are hosting Liverpool, who beat Leicester in game week 9. One of the big questions here is Mo Salah's fitness. It looks like he's back. We're yet to see whether he features. We're recording this on Wednesday morning. If he features in Wednesday night's Champions League game. But we'll touch on Salah in greater detail later on with our Twitter question. I was just curious about some of the other options that have become available for Liverpool, given the absences they've got at the back. Even the likes of Nico Williams, who's in at 3.9 million, came on and finished the game at right back against Leicester, possibly therefore could even start this next clash at the Amex Stadium. And what about James Milner? Is it crazy to look at him? He's only owned by 0.2%, two assists against Leicester, and I imagine he's going to stay. How long is Trent out for? I'm not sure, but I think he should be. Milner should be in there. Is that right for this game away at Brighton?
Yeah, and he takes corners as well, which obviously Liverpool are pretty good on. Certainly on one side,
and penalties too,
of course, where he's very, very efficient and precise. The thing is, with Naby Keita's injury, he might move up from right back to central midfielder or in midfield, where maybe you don't do as much in terms of assisting goals than if you were right back, especially considering how Liverpool are playing.
The other thing with Nico Williams, of course, is that he's listed as a defender in the game, so you benefit from the clean sheet points, whereas for Milner, he's listed as a midfielder in the game. So even if he plays in defence, you're only going to get the 1 point for the clean sheet. So the upside of Nico Williams is hugely improved over that of Milner. So, and I think Jules is right. I suspect that Milner will play in Keita's position in the midfield, and Nico Williams will take that spot instead of Trent.
But Milner will still take penalties if there are any, and probably corners too, wouldn't he?
Not if Salah's back.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Salah famously is such a generous player, always looking to make sure other players are getting in the goals. I'm sure he'd be happy to stand aside.
What about Diogo Jota, who's a really popular purchase for FPL managers this week?
Jota's the one for me when it comes to Liverpool. 3 goals in his last 4 games. I think if he is going to be a regular starter at that price, 6.6 million, it's an absolute no-brainer. And I'm just sort of holding back just to see how things pan out. Obviously, with Salah coming back, you know, that there is more competition for places. But the way he's playing at the moment, he's hit the ground running. He fits into that team so neatly. And if he's going to be a regular starter, I think you just have to have him.
Well, that's the big question, I guess. But even before Mo Salah went out with that coronavirus positive, before the international break, Jota was coexisting with Salah in the team, maybe not always starting, but still producing those numbers.
I mean, it was the City game. That was the big eye-opener for me, particularly from an FPL perspective, in that Klopp started all 4 of them. You thought, OK, maybe Jota will come in for Firmino every now and again, or maybe he'll sub on for Mane, but all 4 of them were in the starting 11. And if Klopp is prepared to do that against Manchester City, theoretically Liverpool's main title rivals, then that suggests he's probably going to be able to do that, or he's probably going to be willing to do that in lots of other games as well.
Everton leads, Sam. Tell us more about why you think this could be a good game for FPL points.
So I think this one's fascinating for me because this is 2 teams that are pretty gung-ho in their approach to attack play. Everton looking so much better with the return of Richarlison in game week 9, you know, scored within a minute. I think apart from Chelsea, that makes them the team with the most goals scored in the opening minute of a game in the Premier League. So they're, you know, not that they're going to do that every week, but I think it tells you something about the way that Everton's set up. And then I think in turn, obviously, that means that for the majority of FPL managers, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is still the go-to asset to own up top, has scored in 7 of his 9 Premier League goals for Everton so far this season, 10 goals, making him the league's top scorer. His form for his millions that he's going to cost you in FPL is unbelievable. You know, we talk about, and I talk regularly about Harry Kane and how good he is as an asset. But when you think about the price difference between Kane and Dominic Calvert-Lewin and the way that he is playing, he makes an unbelievable bid, in fact, to be captain this week. I think he could be a really nice option against Leeds, who like to attack at every given opportunity. Last week, Leeds had 25 shots against Arsenal in the Premier League. Only Manchester United versus Newcastle with 28 and Leeds themselves versus Villa with 27 produced more shots in a game so far this season than Leeds did in that game. So they will go to attack Everton, and therefore that should leave plenty of space for the likes of Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison at Everton to return good points.
I noticed you don't mention James Rodriguez in that.
No, and I think James Rodriguez for me is a difficult own right now. He is doing a lot of brilliant things, and when you watch him, he firmly passes the eye test. But he's assisting the assist a lot, and as FPL managers, that is the thing that we hate the most. We hate to see our players put in beautiful balls, pick out the right players, only for them to go on and assist the goal that gets scored for their teams, because you're not going to get any points for that. So he's a very difficult own right now. And I think if you're going with Everton, you really want to be on Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And I think there are other options in that midfield price bracket that James Rodriguez falls into that would be better buys right now.
Okay.
And for Leeds, James, I think I've got the mother of all differentials in Rafinha, who I thought was very, very interesting against Arsenal at the weekend. maybe not, you know, in terms of his positioning, his numbers, and okay, there was no goals or no assist, but he looked very dangerous. He's only owned by 0.1%.
Wow.
And I think at 5.4 million, he's an absolute bargain. Someone to keep in mind, because I think he will improve massively with Bielsa. I was told he worked really well during the international break with Bielsa on the training ground. Clearly starting to understand exactly what Bielsa wants from him. I think he would be playing pretty much every game ahead of Elder Costa, with Harrison on the other side, and I think he could come really good.
Wow, that's interesting. Are you getting him in, Jules?
I think I might this weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
Woof. Okay. Jules, tell us about Chelsea Spurs. Meanwhile,
it's obviously the biggest game of the weekend on Sunday at Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea have a very good record against Spurs. They've won the last three in the Premier League. I think Spurs have only won once at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League. And Lampard, in the last two games, have had the better of Jose Mourinho, both tactically, I think, last season, home and away. And I think this is a great game for Lampard because he can play cautious and a bit safe like we saw at United when he went for a back five, clearly not to concede any goals and was very happy with the point. He could do that again on Sunday, even if it's at the Bridge, because with no fans there, you would not feel the pressure of maybe you know we have to go forward a bit more. And if he wants to play safe, Chelsea are so good defensively. Tom mentioned earlier a lot of people doubling up on Chilwell and Zuma, or Thiago Silva and Chilwell, Thiago Silva and Zuma. And I think that's the possibility. Or he can go more expensive, and with all the attacking options that he has, I think this could be a very very interesting game. Tammy Abraham for me is quite interesting because very little ownership because he didn't start the season as a starter, but scored last weekend a really good goal, I thought, against Newcastle. He had been certainly very interesting in his movement, in his relationship with Timo Werner too, so maybe keep Abraham in mind too.
Okay, well, we'll talk a little bit more about Spurs, who obviously face a tough fixture here, and I think the general perception is have a run of really difficult games coming up. But we'll focus on that in the long view very, very shortly. Other games that are happening this week, Arsenal taking on Wolves, which, Jules, you're insisting there are going to be loads of goals in.
Yeah, of course, 0-0. That's a good 0-0 coming up.
Okay.
So if you've got defensive assets, you know, Kilman, Rui Patricio, Boli, whoever you want, I think this is a good time.
Right.
I mean, they scored 9 goals, both teams, in 9 games. So they can't score, clearly. They can defend much better, only 10 conceded for both of them as well. So they've got exactly the same goal difference. And those games are never really good games,
okay,
let's be honest.
Those numbers, you say 9 goals in 9 games. I think, isn't that even better than the number that Man City have managed to score of late, Tom? They're taking on Burnley, another less than prolific side. Everybody has heralded this as the start of a great run of games for Man City, which, again, we'll touch on a little bit in the long view. But what's your take? Are you piling in on Pep's men?
I've been saying this for a few weeks now. This is the week to pile in on Man City players. They've got an exceptionally kind run of fixtures coming up. Yes, their form has been up and down, but if they can't get a decent points haul and a decent goal tally from these next few games, then Pep Guardiola might as well rip up that freshly signed contract and go and look elsewhere.
Right.
I mean, one thing that you can say about City from an FPL perspective is that because their form has been a little bit up and down, there are some huge differential. There's huge differential potential in their squad. Starting off with their defenders, João Cancelo, who has got the second highest points per game average out of the entire City squad, 5.5 million, 4.2% ownership. Kyle Walker, 8.8% ownership. Ruben Dias, 2% ownership. Aymeric Laporte, 2.9% ownership. And all those players are between 5.5 and 6 million. And with the game City have got coming up, home to Burnley, home to Fulham, and home to West Brom in the next 4 game weeks, you have to think they'll get some decent... you have to think they'll get some clean sheets on the board.
Right.
In midfield, we know all about De Bruyne and Sterling, both quite expensive in fantasy terms, but as they showed towards the end of last season, capable of putting together runs of double-digit hauls. Phil Foden as well, much cheaper, 6.5 million, 6% ownership.
Right.
And then up front, Sergio Aguero, 10.3 million, so he's not as expensive as he has been in previous seasons, when we've seen him at sort of 12 million and 12.5 even, I think, only 1.3% ownership. Yes, he's coming back from injury, but you have to think he'll get some decent game time in these fixtures. And these are the sorts of games where, you know, if last season at least is anything to go on, City are capable of doing serious damage.
Right. I mean, Burnley particularly is a team they love to score big goals against. It's just some of the prices involved, even though they're cheaper than they have been in the past. Sergio Aguero, he'll probably get time. He'll probably get minutes until he gets injured again. Kevin De Bruyne with 2 assists in his last 6 games. Phil Foden, who's massively cheaper but has done absolutely nothing of late. Are you actually, I know these are attractive ideas, but are you actually following through and getting these players in?
Yes, that is the plan. Ooh, I feel like this is going to be...
We will check. You know we will check.
I feel like this is going to be a pivotal moment in my season.
Right. This is when I overtake you, Tom.
Either this is going to be the week when everything clicks into place and I streak away with my new Man City-filled squad, or everything falls apart. But I just think these fixtures are so attractive. And at some point, City are going to start putting wins on the board. They're too good not to.
Right.
And yes, they're, you know, they've been disappointing from an FPL perspective, but there have been glimpses. You know, De Bruyne is the man who runs the show. The difficulty he's had is that City have been without some of their key attackers. Mm. But I just think with these games coming up, he is going to start producing. He's being rested in midweek for the Champions League. So in a very rare example of Pep Guardiola showing FPL managers what he intends to do, he's a nailed-on starter against Burnley. He's probably going to start most of the other games. And there is always a rotation fear with Guardiola, but I think, given the fixtures, it's worth it.
That would be so Guardiola if he didn't play at the weekend as well. No, I hear what you're saying. There is a school of thought among some FPL managers that more than, in addition to those players you mentioned, that City are fundamentally missing the likes of, well, David Silva, and maybe from further back, Leroy Sané, and that's why things are not, even with these players coming back in, they're not going to catch fire this season, even in fixtures like this, and that's why it's better to go for players like Cancelo at the back, who I think is their most transferred in player in this game week ahead of this run of games. Anybody else looking to bring in City players, or do you have them already?
I'm going to go with the defender this week, I think, because unlike Tom, I don't trust them going forward. They had 65.9% of the possession against Spurs in game week 9, yet did absolutely nothing with it. Had a lot of shots on target, or a lot of shots, but just didn't make anything come of them. And I fear that they've lost their confidence. But defensively, Burnley, I mean, they scored against Crystal Palace in game week 9, but before that they hadn't scored for 4 weeks. So there should be a clean sheet there and some attacking potential, like Tom said earlier, for the likes of Cancelo and obviously Laporte, who we've seen from seasons gone by, has got that in his locker. And over the next few game weeks after that, the likes of Fulham should be a clean sheet in that one too. So I think the defence looks like a really nice option, plus at the sort of 5.5 bracket that you're talking about for Cancelo and Diaz, they look like good value. Mm. Whereas I just think that with the likes of Aguero and Sterling and KDB, the price that you have to pay for these players is huge, and we're not seeing the level of returns that we have been in the other assets that are available in other clubs.
Okay, well, since this whole Man City decision is based not just on the clash with Burnley, but the fixtures beyond, Jules, how about we get your reaction to the question as we get into the long view next? The long view, listener, that's where we grab our Premier League fixture difficulty rating chart, which you can find at fantasy.premierleague.com. And it lists everybody and it lists all the fixtures coming up. And it's a great way of spotting who's got a run of games on the way that you want to be part of. Now, this is something we've obviously touched on in the fixtures. The current accepted wisdom that Man City have great fixtures coming up, and they're currently top of our kind of next 6 games mini chart. And Spurs have really rubbish fixtures, and they are indeed bottom of our next 6 games mini chart. But is this absolutely true to the extent that we should divest our Spurs assets and bring in City players? We've highlighted some of the concerns about City players, but they do have 4 home matches in the next 6 game weeks. Burnley has mentioned Fulham, West Brom and Newcastle. I mean, it's kind of hard to draw up a better list of games than that, even if they have only scored 5 goals in their last 6 game weeks. Spurs, by contrast, away at Chelsea, home to Arsenal, away at Crystal Palace, away at Liverpool, home to Leicester, and then away at Wolves in the next 6. When you break those six fixtures down, Sam, I'll come to you as someone who's almost certainly done this already. Are they all that tough? I mean, Arsenal, for example, Crystal Palace, Palace who conceded four against Chelsea, Arsenal with all the problems they've got.
No, for me, these were always going to be games that Spurs absolutely had to win. Lee and I both said at the beginning of the season that Spurs had a really nice run and they had to be there or thereabouts by the time that they hit that Manchester City game in game week 9. And if they were, then that was a really good opportunity to kind of kick on and defeat some of these big clubs that normally Spurs kind of trip over. But having said that, you know, the last couple of games against Manchester City, Spurs have put in decent performances, scored goals and gone on to win the game. And we also obviously saw that in the Champions League the season before last. So for me, these aren't games that you should be scared of owning Spurs assets for. They love a goal in North London derby against Arsenal. That will always be a high scoring, decent game, regardless of whether there's fans in the stadium or not. And the same with the Chelsea fixtures. There's always potential for goals there. There's been 27 goals in the last 10 Premier League games between Chelsea and Spurs. So I think if you are looking to for reasons to get rid of Spurs because Man City have better fixtures, then go with it. But for me, the form is what's been absolutely key so far this season. The fixtures have been important, but the form of the players has been absolutely vital. Spurs are in great run of form. For me, it feels very knee-jerky to take them out for players that we haven't yet seen have a good run of form.
Form over fixtures for you, Sam?
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting. Okay, elsewhere, who else stands out? Who else are you looking at this chart and thinking, ooh, we should get some of them in? At Villa, you probably own a couple of Villa assets already, but they've got great games coming up. Away at West Ham, which is maybe not the easiest, but then home to Newcastle. Then they've got Wolves, Burnley at home, West Brom away, and then Palace at home. Those are good fixtures. How many Villa players have you got, Tom?
I have two Villa players. I've got Emi Martinez and Jack Grealish. The tricky thing with Villa is that they often do well in the fixtures where you don't expect them to do well and then do poorly in the fixtures that you expect them to win. We had the perfect example last weekend, Villa at home to Brighton, and we'd seen how well Villa had done winning away at Arsenal in the previous game. I was pretty happy with the Villa players I had, and then they end up losing. So they're a difficult team to predict. I think they are better suited to playing on the counter-attack and being a counter-punching team, which is why we've seen them rack up those fantastic performances against Liverpool and against Arsenal. From like a psychological perspective, when you see that one of your FPL players has got a home game against a Burnley or a Fulham, it, you know, generally you think, well, there's no need for me to do anything there. I'll just leave it. But I do have a slight worry about Villa. And also, was I think I saw someone pointing out on Twitter the other day, Jack Grealish, who's obviously having a fantastic season and whose ownership is very high, really does blow hot and cold. He's had some big point scores this season, but he's also had games where he's not registered any sorts of points. So while I'm not looking to move out either of my Villa players, I do have a slight concern about their ability to string decent results together against teams who on paper they should be able to beat comfortably.
Okay. Jules, anything stand out for you from the FDR chart?
Only Leicester, who we mentioned before, certainly the next three games with Fulham, Sheffield United and Brighton. Then they will have Everton and Spurs and Man United. So the next three are a bit tougher. Although, as we saw in the Man City game, you know, I think that even against bigger side, if you want, who maybe have a bit more of the ball, they're still so dangerous on the counter-attack. I really think that the Liverpool game was obviously very difficult for them and they didn't play well at all. But I really think that Rodgers have them played in a way that they can be good on the counter, they can be good on possession. And if you pick right the Leicester players that you want, they can give you some points.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to our midweek Twitter question next, which is, with Mo Salah back for game week 10, is transferring him in the biggest priority for non-owners? Midweek Twitter question, Mo Salah back. Is your biggest job getting him back in your side if you managed to take him out or didn't have him in the first place? Indeed, almost 1.4 million managers shipped him out over that COVID positive test. But he's expected to feature in the Champions League Wednesday night. And then you've got Brighton at the weekend. About 750,000 managers just benched him for last weekend. Sam, I think that's what you did. Tom, we're going to get your response as somebody who got rid. But first of all, some of the answers we've had coming in via the hashtag FPLpod. The underdog says, fools transferred him out, is all I can say. There you go. Witty, I took Bruno in for Salah on a wild card and I captained him and I got 22 points, so that was the right move and I'm going to stick with Bruno for the next two away games. And then he's going to switch back to Mo in game week 12. So that's Witty's plan. Louis says, not going to bring Salah back in probably. If Jota is in contention to be in the four alongside Firmino, Mane and Salah, are we not spending well over 12 million on someone that could potentially be splitting attacking returns from the four? For me, Jota is coming in for Zaha. And I think that's really interesting, actually. Certainly, that's kind of my thinking. I can't afford Salah again, but Jota might kind of cover me a little bit for Liverpool. Thanks very much for that. Hashtag FPL pod, the way to get in touch. Tom, your Salah perspective.
So I hadn't planned to get rid of Salah at any point this season. And then when the news came through of his COVID diagnosis, I was forced to take action because my squad is now so thin that there was no one I could bench him for. So my initial plan had been not to make any transfers last week and then use two transfers this week to, as discussed previously, flood my team with Man City players. But I had to get rid of Salah last weekend, brought in Bruno Fernandes, who basically saved my game week. And yeah, to be honest, I'm not in any hurry to bring Salah back in. I think the Jota, I think Jota's emergence changes things from a Liverpool perspective. He's literally half the price of Salah currently. Jota costs 6.6, Salah costs 12.2. And yes, Salah is a very reliable point scorer in fantasy football. He takes the penalties, he starts every game. But I think if you need a Liverpool attacker, for me, from a sort of budget perspective, Jota makes more sense. And also, one of the questions we had was whether Son or Salah was a better FPL asset. On current form, since the start of the season, you have to say it's Son, because not only has he outscored Salah by almost 20 points, but he costs almost 3 million FPL pounds less.
Wow.
While Salah's a very attractive asset, I don't think there's any need to break the bank to fit him into your team if you don't currently have him.
It's just so scary not having him. Jules, what do you think?
It is a bit.
Yeah, I agree with Tom. He's not for me. I wonder what will happen in the rest of the season with Jota's emergence. I think Salah might end up playing a bit more central and sort of leaving that right-hand side to Trent and to Jota. And in that case, maybe he might be efficient, very efficient again like he was in the past. I just think that if you take away the penalties, his expected goals tally this season is less than before and maybe a bit disappointing in a way. And I'm just not sure. And I might be wrong and he might have a season with 25 goals and I hope he does for him and for Liverpool and for all the owners who have him, all the managers. I'm just not sure. There's something about his game right now that I'm not convinced of, especially again with Jota's coming in so good.
Fair enough. Call us fools, as the underdog does, but we're not getting him back in. Next up, let's hear who we are making moves for and who's going to wear our armband this weekend in game week 10. Right, transfers and captains, everybody. Jules, what moves you were making?
So obviously, as I said, I played my wild card not long ago, so I still have one transfer this week. I can bring Rafinha, or maybe defensively, as we said, Joao Cancelo, for example, or one of the Man City players could be quite interesting, I think. I keep Kane, I keep Vardy, I keep Bruno Fernandes and Heung-Min Son.
Sounds good. Tom?
So my plan before we started recording was to take a 4-point hit to bring in Kevin De Bruyne and a City defender,
right?
Probably Joao Cancelo, possibly someone else, and then also to captain KDB.
Now,
as happens so often when I come on this podcast, I've listened to Sam's very sensible take on things. And now,
what about what I said? Come on, Ali, I said my name. I've listened to Sam and Jules, and
if Rafinha scores a hat trick this weekend, Jules, and you successfully captain him, then you'll have my confidence. I just feel like there is a conceivable outcome this weekend where, come Saturday evening, City have put 7 goals past Burnley. Kevin De Bruyne has got a hat trick of assists and a goal and all the bonus points,
Believe,
and I'm
Tom.
Sitting on my sofa. Yep. with a whiskey and smoking a cigar, both of which I've had to go out and buy because I'm not the sort of man who owns those kind of things. And I'm feeling really smug about having foreseen that. But doubt is starting to creep in. I now wonder whether I might just bring in the City Defender and kind of use this Burnley game as a trial test to see how City...
But imagine how sick you're going to be. Well, especially if you have your whiskey and cigar, but how sick you're going to be if they do that and you don't have them and you're just there hating yourself.
This is the torture of FPL. Yeah. And plus, I've now voiced these, you know, voiced
you
these fears publicly.
You
so
have
there's,
to do
there's just no
we
escape.
Check. We will check.
Do it. Now, always go with your instinct. Don't be me with Andy Robertson on the bench. Don't do it. Okay, Sam, you should bring in KDB now just to troll.
Yeah, just
controlling. Can you imagine if he doesn't do it and I do? That'd be brilliant. I am being very boring this week. I'm very happy with the premiums that I have. So I'm going to lose one of my cheap defenders and use the money that I have in the bank to upgrade to one of the City defenders. I haven't yet decided which of my defenders goes. I've got Lamptey, who's obviously suspended but has been playing well. I've got Dallas and I've got KWP. One of those three will go but will become Cancelo probably. Maybe DS, depending on price changes, whether which one of the defenders I want to lose. But yeah, a Man City defender in for me is the obvious move this
week. And who's your captain's pick, Sam?
Oh, again, this is a tough call this week. I am really tempted to just ignore everything that Jules said earlier and Captain Kane against Chelsea, because I do think he'll have a good game. Salah against Brighton, for me, screams captain's armband all day long, even if you guys don't own him. But Dominic Calvert-Lewin versus Leeds will probably take it.
Right. Jules?
It has to be Vardy at home against Fulham, really. Surely, if we follow the rules that we mentioned at the beginning and, you know, don't captain someone against the top six, even if Sam doesn't want to listen to me, it's you know, it's a loss, I guess.
But he's a Norwegian expert we're sense. Talking about, Sam.
Yeah, he is. We can't remember his name, but he is.
Jules, so yeah, Vardy for you, and Tom?
Either Kevin De Bruyne, or if I bottle it, Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Very good. Make sure that you put out all your fires, FPL Manager, by 6:30 Friday night, ahead of the clash between Crystal Palace and Newcastle. And best of luck, everybody. Thanks so much, Tom, Jules and Sam, for being with us today. It's going to be a fascinating game week, as ever. We'll be back next Wednesday to draw some conclusions and draw up some plans for game week 11 in the far off future. For now, though, that's it. So goodbye from all of us here.